And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, joined today, Michigan Tuesday, we'll call it. I don't know if we'll keep it on Tuesdays, but with Austin Meek, of course, Michigan beat writer, formerly my co-host on Run Past Michigan, which, as you know by now, has merged. We've merged podcasts. The Beat will be your feed for all things Michigan, Michigan State this season.
RIP to RPM. We'll miss our Bo Schembechler intro, but
Austin, I thought I had such a great name when I picked that one out.
It was really good. I liked it. It was good. Yeah.
And now it's gone, but that's fine. That's my like seventh podcast name in the last 5 years, but that's okay.
The RPO offense outlasted the RPM podcast.
It did. So that's good for everybody listening. But in any event, we discussed all this last week, of course. But Austin and I will be here on this feed for the football season. All the stuff that we did last year will be the same. It'll just be in a different place. So be sure to stick with us here. And of course, we'll also be having Colton Pouncey on to do some Michigan State stuff as we go. And then myself and Brendan and any combination of those four. I don't know. We'll see how it all goes. But we'll all be involved in this one. So appreciate your listening and support of the Athletic. And also, we got some Michigan football to talk about. Some real stuff this time. So you ready to do this?
Yeah, let's do it. We had our first weekly news conference of the season with Jim Harbaugh. Yep. And that makes it feel a little bit more real. I mean, it's a weird tension between, on the one hand, feeling normal, like a normal game week routine. And then you also get these reminders that none of this is normal. You know, we're talking to Jim Harbaugh on Zoom. We're talking about, well, you know, we can't really say who our starters are because somebody could test positive on Friday and they're out for the game. You know, I mean, just anytime you start to kind of get lulled into thinking it's normal, you get these reminders that nothing about this season is normal at all.
Yeah, it's around every corner, right? It's like every fourth question will be, well, oh, by the way, did you guys have any positive tests? You know, like, are you okay? All this, does this guy have COVID? Does this guy not have COVID? So, I mean, obviously that's something that, you know, it's interesting. When the NFL season started, and I obviously started out pretty heavy in that one, it was very weird for the first, I would say, like 2 weeks or maybe not even, but like a week and a half of like practice. And then it got super normal. The minute they started playing games, and I'll tell you this, I wondered with the Lions, like, are fans going to give them like a break because this was like awkward and a weird offseason? We got to like the second quarter and I was like, okay, well, nope, they're furious. So I'm like, so it'll feel normal really fast for everyone on Saturday, I promise you. We can talk about keeping perspective all we want, but you know what? Fans have gone through this year too. I think they've earned the right to be a little whatever they want to be on Saturday night. So,
question is, you know, if this were a normal season, you know, if none of the past 6 months had happened, you would be looking at this game and saying, like, this is a big deal for Jim Harbaugh, because this is the kind of game that Michigan has not shown up in the past, you know, has not been able to get over the hump in these big, you know, night game, road game, ranked opponent. Like, this is it for Michigan's program if they want to get to the next step. And so if this were a normal year, I think you would be looking at this game and saying, you know, this is a game that Michigan really, really needs to win. And I think that's part of my question is, you know, I sense from the Michigan fan base, you know, they're maybe not as dialed into every little detail as they typically would be before a season opener. I think there's more of a, you know, let's wait and see what happens when we get there. We don't really know a lot about this team. But, you know, that was my question is, so if Michigan loses this game, how long do we give it before fans are right back in the, you know, furious at Jim Harbaugh mode? And it sounds like that probably won't take very long.
I guess it'll all depend on what happens, right? Because it's like, If you go into a game and your roster is shorthanded because, you know, you've got guys who've tested and can't play, you know, what are you going to do, right? That's difficult. You know, obviously everyone's going through the same thing in terms of practice, being condensed, not having the type of time you'd want, all these things. But, you know, I think it's all going to depend on how it looks, like how it looks and how it feels. And if some of the similar problems that they have had at the start of seasons over the last couple years is still there, you know, if they're familiar issues, this isn't a first-year coach. I mean, I just got done listening to Mel Tucker's Zoom call, and he's barely trying to figure out who he's got on the team. I mean, those guys barely know their roster, right? And, like, we can sit here and say, well, that's an excuse, whatever, but, I mean, like, that's an excuse, but it's a valid one.
Yeah.
It's real. Uh-huh. This isn't that. You know, the coaching staff has been here. The offensive staff remained intact. Michigan told us, Austin, all offseason, we have prepared, we believe, better than anybody else. They told us several times they thought that their testing was workable and doable. They were very vocal about how they believed that they were ready to play. Jim Harbaugh at one point in the summer said, well, give us 2 weeks. We'll be ready to play. They have not backed off on any of that. So while I'm not going to sit here and say that I would expect to see, you know, a flawless, perfect performance from a team that's not going to go through the bumps and bruises and things of that you go through in a crunch time like this, I got to tell you, based on what we've heard, Austin, I would expect them to be efficient. I would expect them to be as close to ready to play as you can, you know, as you can sort of expect from a team in this situation. Based on what they've told us and all they have told us for the last several months is, we're ready to go. We've been ready to go, and we're ready to do this. Am I wrong? Because that's the thing that I've heard every single time I've listened, to any of these calls.
No, you're not wrong, and. I always hesitate to kind of read too much into things things that Jim Harbaugh might say on a Monday, because the truth of it is a lot of times what happens in those things is the coach reaches in his big old bag of cliches and just pulls out the first one that he comes to mind. So, you never really know. But I did think it was interesting yesterday, Jim Harbaugh talking about his team. He was asked about this. Michigan is in a different spot this year because last year, they were a trendy pick to win the division. Not this year. Most people have them running second, third, fourth, somewhere in there. Jim Harbaugh talked about, he really likes the chemistry of this team, likes the togetherness of the team. He said something about, he really likes how they've prepared, and now they're just, getting down to the details of like execution and assignments. And there's a part of me that's like, wait a minute. what it's been like 9 months. I mean, you would think that is the one thing that they should be really sharp on. They should be really sharp on assignment and execution, because they've had so much time to work on that stuff. So I'm with you. I think that they need to be sharp. If they come out and they look disorganized the way they did early last season, I think we're going to have to wonder, like, what were you guys doing? What was the stuff that we had been hearing all through the fall about, how great and consistent the preparation has been? I think we need to see that. I think, win or lose, I think Michigan needs to look sharp. They need to look on point. They need to look organized. And I think we need to see it from Joe Milton. We've heard so much now about Joe Milton and how impressive he's been. And, this is the time now. Tough situation for him making his first start, but I think it's fair to expect that along with everybody else, he's going to come out sharp and on point.
Yeah, I think that before I get to Milton really quick, I think that I like what you said there, to be sharp as a team. And I think that it's important to note, if they could lose this game because Minnesota's good, right? They could lose this game because Minnesota has a lot of talented players. They were a very good team last year. Great quarterback, great receiver situation. They might be dinged up with COVID. Who knows, right? But if Minnesota's a good football team, they could lose the game because Minnesota goes and takes it from them. If, however, and you'll know the difference, and this is where I go back to that like Lions game, they lost that game, they gave it away, right? They just gave the game away. If Michigan's in a situation where it's making these self-inflicted errors and wounds that are just giving a game away, that we know by watching it they clearly shouldn't be giving away, then you've got a problem. And that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about first and foremost. If they lose the game and get beat by a team that beats them, then that's one of those things I think you chalk it up to, like, well, it's a pandemic, everything, this thing's a little wobbly right now, and we'll see what happens. But you'll know the difference one way or the other. Moving into Milton, though, Austin, and the thing we've talked about a couple times here and before we started, I would like to get your take on this, because I keep going back and forth. I can't decide if they truly believe that Joe Milton is ready, all the way ready, to go out here and do this and be a top flight quarterback in the Big Ten, or if they are trying to talk it into reality and pump him with confidence. Jim Harbaugh now, several times this week already, including on his radio show last night, went out and basically said, I think he said on the radio show, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised by how this guy looks. He's ready to play football. Harbaugh has dealt in hyperbole before. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but I will say that I don't recall too many times where he's gone that far out with a quarterback who's clearly not ready to play, for whatever that means, but at the same time, he doesn't really have a choice. I'm curious where you sort of land on this, because we just don't know. It's really kind of up in the air, and we really don't know.
Yeah, we were talking about this last night. It's definitely a different vibe than it was going into last year, because I remember last year, a lot of the quarterback conversation was, you know, Josh Gattis had that line about Shea Patterson playing golf in the offseason.
Right.
Jim Harbaugh's talking about, well, we're going to use two quarterbacks. We're going to play Dylan McCaffrey. You know, I think part of that is probably, you know, player management. It may have been that at this time last year, before the season, the idea was, you know, we need to light a little bit of a fire under Shea Patterson. Look, the way Shea played in the first month of the season, all of those questions about, you know, preparation and offseason and all that stuff were totally fair, because he didn't play well early in the season. Yeah. It's a totally different vibe when you listen to people talk about Joe Milton. And part of that is, you know, Shea Patterson, a guy who was a senior and played a ton of football, maybe they felt like, you know, they could light a fire under him a little bit. They could give him some of that motivation. Whereas with Joe Milton, maybe what you need is just to build up his confidence. So, I think it's real. I think that what they've seen from Joe Milton, I don't think that they're just blowing smoke about it. But there are some things that I think give me a little bit of pause and make me say, you know, let's wait and see a little bit, including the fact that Michigan's quarterback situation wasn't great last year. You know, Shea Patterson struggled in some spots last year, and Joe Milton was on the team. You know, maybe he took a huge leap in this offseason, and he's a totally different player than he was last year. But if he comes out and just lights the world on fire, I'm going to think, you know, maybe they should have given this guy a shot earlier. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, I mean, Milton, I think from the minute he got here has been, and I wrote about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, like an ascending guy just from the very beginning. It was, he came in a winter and enrolled early, and I don't think anybody had any expectations or visions of grandeur that he was going to be ready immediately or even close to that, given that he played in a, you know, high school program that wasn't great. They struggled. They didn't ask him to do a ton. It was still a lot of stuff that he was learning, even though you could see all the raw tools. But everything you heard from them, pretty consistently, even if you talk to people in, like, you know, private moments that weren't, you know, broadcast for public assumption or consumption, it was like, yeah, no, I mean, he's impressive. Like, he's further along than we maybe thought he was, even though he still has a lot of work to do. But ultimately, the thing that I think I'll buy here, and that we've heard from Gattis and Harbaugh several times on Milton, is that it seems like he's done everything they've asked him to do and then some, right? Like, it seems like everything they put in front of him to say, we need you to do A through Z on this list to prove to us that you can start at quarterback at Michigan, and we need you to do it in crazy circumstances within the next whatever months. I don't know what every single check mark on that list would be, but it seems like he's done every single thing they've asked him to do. He's showed up. He's continued to improve on the areas that they've asked him to work on. He's close with his teammates. They're close with him. They really like him. I think he gets along with everybody. They seem to get along with him. I think there's a lot of intangible stuff with Milton that connects him to guys on this team in a way that we just, I'm not sure that we've seen from a Michigan quarterback in kind of a minute here. I mean, you know, Shea Patterson came in from out of nowhere from a transfer and had to learn everything, a new roster on the fly. Jake Rudock was a grad transfer. John O'Korn was a transfer. Wilton had a little bit of that. Wilton Spade, a guy who came in as a high school recruit and knew everybody and they knew him. And I think that that helped him a ton the year that he started and ended up having a nice season, better than I think a lot of people thought. I feel like there's some of that with Joe Milton too. You know, he knows the program. They know him. I mean, on an intimate level, deeper than you ever would have if you brought a transfer in. And people go back and forth all the time about why did he keep taking these transfers? Why did he keep taking these transfers? Why don't you just let one of these guys figure it out? And it's one of those things that, I mean, I'd be honest. I mean, I had the same questions at the time. You know, when they brought Shea in here and gave up on Brandon Peters, it was kind of like, well, okay, I mean, maybe this will work, but it's not promised. And it's going to be a lot of growing that's going to have to happen in a microwave. All those intangible things that Shea had to kind of overcome, the hurdles and whatnot to sort of, and he did, you know, the guys ended up respecting him and everything else, but Milton already has that. And so he doesn't have to go out there and do that. They're going to have his back. I think that's a big thing for quarterbacks. I don't think he's going to have to win the huddle. You know what I mean? Like, I think they don't huddle, obviously, but I don't think he's going to have to win the 11 out there with him. I think they're going to be with him no matter what. That's the vibe I've gotten. Maybe I'm reading too much. You've talked to the players more than I have. Is it the same on your end in that I think that they're all aboard the Joe Milton train and nobody's trying to get off of it or even second-guessing themselves right now?
No, definitely. I mean, every single player you talk to has a Joe Milton story of something that he did in practice where they were like, wow, this guy is really talented. Now, you know, he's still got to put that all together because I remember, again, hearing that last year too of just how explosive this offense looked in the preseason. And then we got to week one. It's like, well, where's that? I will be interested to see early on, you know, how much trust Michigan shows in Joe Milton. Do they go out there and just turn him loose and let it rip and say, Joe, you're our guy, go win this game for us? Or do they come into the game with a game plan of, okay, we're going to run the ball, we're going to lean on our running backs, we're going to play defense, and we're not going to ask too much of our quarterback making his first start. You know, if it's me, and if Joe Milton is as good as I've heard, I'm saying, Joe, go win us this game. Because Minnesota's a team, they've got Tanner Morgan at quarterback, the leading passer in the Big Ten last year, Rashad Bateman at wide receiver, maybe the, you know, the best receiver in the Big Ten. They've got their offensive line coming back. And this Minnesota team is going to score some points. And I think if you're Michigan, you have to go into this game thinking, we're going to outscore them. We're, you know, Michigan's defense, you know, the secondary, they've got some new pieces there. I don't think that you can ask your defense to go out there and just shut down a really good offensive team from Minnesota and think that, you know, you can just kind of, you know, play ball control and grind out a, you know, a 21-17 win in this game. I don't think that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I don't think it can be sort of over the top for the sake of just trying to be over the top, right? Like, I think Gattis has said a few times about, you know, last year they tried to take a ton of shots early in the season and some of them didn't work and, you know, then they got away from it and whatever. I mean, like, I don't think you got to force anything. And I would say that, you know, ideally in this situation, you'd probably want to protect Milton as best you can with your run game and, you know, establish him as a participant in the run game. I think that that would help an awful lot as well. But also, to your point, don't be afraid to dig in there and call something, you know, in a situation that you might think he might be able to, you know, take a shot or fit one deep vertically or something. Don't be afraid maybe to go there because, like you said, they're going to need it in this game. Minnesota's not going to, you're not going to shut them out. This, you know, we saw the start of this a year ago and it was clunky at the beginning, but ultimately at the end of the season, I just think the whole thing, I mean, Gattis had the thing working at the end of the year last year. It was working. They were, you know, they were finding stuff against good teams. They did whatever they wanted to Indiana. Then they go to Ohio State and they gained yards and scored points. They didn't lose the game because they couldn't score or move the ball. They did the same thing against Alabama. You know, obviously some of those drives need to be finished. But playing football on the back of a defense being perfect and an offense playing a supporting cast in 2020, if you are not recruiting like Alabama or Clemson or Georgia, is a recipe for a bad, disappointing season. They can't do that anymore. So it has to be, like you said, ready or not, Joe Milton, it has to be sort of, you know, you've got to let Gattis go into these games and say, Josh, I need you. I need your bag to be as full as you can have it, because if we have to score 40 points, I need you to be able to scheme up 40 points for us. Not, I want you to bleed the clock, slow it down, don't ever take any chances, don't do anything out of whatever, our defense will get it back for us. You've got to be able to let your offense, you know, play with a little more rope. And I think we saw them start to move toward that last year. I'm fascinated if they can continue that going forward. And if Milton is, like you said, I mean, yeah, Austin, you've said it a couple times, if Milton's even close to what they've said they think he is, then it should work to some level, and they should be in every game they play this season. I mean, that's Ohio State aside, every other game, it should be one that they have a chance to win. I mean, that's how you would have to look at it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
So you posted your preseason predictions on Monday. I haven't formally done mine, but just in my mind, I think we ended up at a pretty similar spot. I think 5-3 for the 8-game schedule is where both of us are at. And I think that, you know, this first game really is kind of a swing game. You picked Michigan, confidence level 2. That's about where my confidence level is. I think I'm leaning a little bit to Minnesota, but I'm in the same way. Yeah. I mean, this, you know, there's a couple games on the schedule that just to me look like total toss ups. And this is one of them. And it sets the course for your whole season. If Michigan goes out and wins this game, now all of a sudden you're looking at the schedule and you're saying, you know, they could be in pretty good shape by the time you get to December. Lose this game, and you can look at the schedule and say, "Whoo, boy, not seeing a bunch more wins on here."
This is one of the hardest games, and they're all hard the preseason every year. But this was like the hardest one I think I've ever had. Like this, I went back and forth on this Michigan Minnesota thing like 8 times. I mean, it was just Minnesota. I'll say this: Minnesota has everything that it needs if it's healthy enough. I guess we'll see. Minnesota has everything it needs to win the game. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Tanner Morgan's the best quarterback in the league last year, not named Fields. Rashad Bateman is awesome. They bring back their entire offensive line, plus I think their 6th offensive lineman that they rotate in there. They did make a change at offensive coordinator, but you know the system's been established. If they don't tinker with it too much, they've got what they need to score points against Michigan. I think that we can look back at last year and how that offense performed, and they didn't play Ohio State, but they did play Penn State, and they did, you know, they won the game. I mean, they were able to do what they wanted to do in that game, and I think Michigan and Penn State are pretty similar talent-wise. So Minnesota has what it needs. The crowd not being there, I think, you know, probably helps Michigan, but at the same time, Michigan always has pressure on itself. For Minnesota, this is like game day's there. This is still flex opportunity to, you know, force people to pay attention to him more than he already does. So it's a challenging game to pick. And it's one, like I said at the top, like, I don't know. I mean, the reason I have confidence points on this is because I couldn't figure out what to do with this game. But Michigan's going to have to play really well. I think that's the ultimate thing. If Michigan plays with the sort of efficiency that they've claimed they've been operating under, then I think they have enough to win the game, because I think they'll have more in the lines, especially defensively, than Minnesota will be able to counter. I think Michigan's talent level in sort of the, you know, the at the in the trenches should be better, and it should allow them to have just enough. But I mean, this is a coin flip. This should be a very good game. I mean, I've got Michigan, but I don't know by what score, and nothing would really surprise me at this point. I would be surprised if they get smoked. How about that? That would be a problem. And that's kind of what we talked about earlier at the top.
I think if you look up and down the schedule, there's really four swing games on here. And, you know, this is one of them.
Yeah.
At Indiana on November 7th, at home against Wisconsin on November 14th, and then at home against Penn State on November 28th. You know, if I'm looking at that right now, I'm thinking 2-2 is probably the baseline expectation. Mm-hmm. I think if you go 3-1 in those games, you're happy. If you go 4-0, boy, you're thrilled.
Right.
To me, if I'm looking at it, I think 2-2 feels about right in those games. And I'm not sure which two it'll be. I think you had them getting Minnesota and Indiana, and then losing to Wisconsin and Penn State. I could totally see that. You know, I've kind of had a, you know, whatever my gut feeling all year has been, that maybe Michigan gets the Penn State game at home. Sounds like Journey Brown is potentially out for Penn State. They already lost Micah Parsons. So, but either way, you know, those are four very winnable games and four very losable games. And to me, those games are the difference between, are you potentially, you know, 6-2 at the end of the year, or are you potentially 4-4 at the end of the year?
Right, and I think I agree with you. Penn State, I feel like, is a more manageable situation. And I'm not saying that they couldn't beat Wisconsin, but it's hard to go back and look at what we saw a year ago in that game at the line of scrimmage and not. I mean, Wisconsin does replace some guys on the offensive line, but the defense still has a ton of dudes that are back. And the offensive line still has a couple guys that are back that are outstanding. And I know Jack Cohn is hurt, and but at the same time, you know, we've been hearing about Graham Mertz up there as, you know, their young prodigy for a long time now, and he's only been there for a year. It feels like forever.
Yeah.
So Wisconsin, I just can't get that out of my head. I mean, I know Jonathan Taylor's gone. I know that some of those guys aren't here anymore, but Michigan got completely demoralized at the line of scrimmage in that game and didn't even look even close. So that's the one where I think when we go down the line here and you say, okay, Minnesota is going to be a really interesting challenge. That's maybe a toss-up. Michigan State's going to be weird because it's week two, but you should get that. Indiana could beat you, but I still think that Michigan has enough in its bag to wiggle off the hook there if they get into a problem, as they often do. And then Wisconsin's the one where we're going to find out, you know, how far you've come in the mental toughness department. Because Wisconsin, you know, I mean, we can call anything we want. Wisconsin put Michigan into a box last year and said, you don't come out of here until we tell you you can. I mean, that was embarrassing.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to find out, you know, where the mental fortitude is within this roster, within this team. Harbaugh says that he believes it's close. I wrote about this the other day, too. When Harbaugh got here and they started everything out, it was so much about operating under pressure and so much about operating against the clock and trying to turn around a rough situation with adversity and all these things. And all they did was just scrap everything aside and grind. And those first two teams that he had, which were pretty veteran clubs, were the most mentally tough Michigan teams I have covered in the 10 years I've been doing it since I'm close. And the last three, with some stretches of that 18 team as an exception, haven't been even on the same stratosphere. This team has to get back to that mental edge of, you know, being disciplined in the moment every day about everything you do. And I know Harbaugh talked about this yesterday. Maybe the pandemic in some ways helps with that, because you don't have any other choice. You have no other choice but to prepare what's right in front of you and just not worry about anything else. We're going to see. I mean, that Wisconsin game's the one right there. If I circle anything on the calendar, it's that one. Yeah, I'll know everything I have to know about where Michigan's going after that game. Barring a situation, right, like if Wisconsin's down 20 players or something like that,
right,
or if Michigan's down 20 players. But if all things are relatively equal, you know, we know where this thing's going, and we'll know, you know, when November 14th is over. I think that's the one I circle and say, that was embarrassing. You got embarrassed a year ago, and I don't care what kind of year this is. If you can't come back and turn that around a little bit, then this is bad and going, you know, south quicker than anybody here wants to admit.
We've talked a lot about the offense, and I do think that that is the side of the ball that I most curious about, you know, most eager to see on Saturday night. But I do think, you know, Michigan's defense has some stuff to prove here. And when you look at those first four games, you know, sort of the bookends with Minnesota and Wisconsin, two really good offenses, two big, you know, offensive lines, physical teams. I think in this first month of the season, we're going to learn a lot about Michigan's defense and Michigan's defensive line in particular, because we've talked about it on the podcast before that, you know, it's time to see it now from some of those guys that we've been hearing about on the defensive line throughout the preseason, you know, Donovan Jeter and Chris Hinton. If we see those guys Saturday night and say, wow, this looks like a different Michigan defensive line on the inside, that'll be a pretty significant thing moving forward, because you're right. You know, Michigan just, you know, they could not stack up physically with Wisconsin last year. It just got blown off the ball. If we see that happening again Saturday night, I think, you know, we have to say, okay, you know, all of this that we've heard about, you know, the great strides that Michigan has made on its defensive line, we got to see that now, right? Because we've heard enough about it, but it's time to show it on the field.
Michigan's, I would say this, Michigan's what I would call their eraser, which would be your problem eraser, the thing that you have in your arsenal that can make up for, you know, deficiencies or errors elsewhere, except for like Devin Bush. By and large, it's been during the Don Brown era, during the year that Durkin was here, and even in stretches of Brady Hoke, the defensive line, the depth up front has been has kept Michigan in games sometimes over the years where maybe some other things aren't going well or what have you. They've typically had, you know, more answers in terms of depth and guys that are, you know, big, strong, powerful dudes who maybe not, you know, first round picks or something, but the talent level has been high enough for them to get through games like against teams like Minnesota, who, while, you know, Minnesota's a good football team and is surging and has got a lot that they like, Michigan's recruiting in the lines against those really premium players that are really the hardest to sign is often better than most of those teams. And that has been the thing that's given them the edge, which is why last year was a little, you know, was a little alarming, I think, for people to see them not have any answer up the middle against a team like that. And that's, like, you nailed it. I mean, Chris Hinton, Donovan Jeter, Carlo Kemp, and anybody else that they can have to go out there and get in the middle and hold the rope, they're not going to be the type of defense Don Brown wants them to be, or even close to what he can envision for them if they can't do anything between the tackles like that. I mean, that's last year, it just was not good enough against the run, against anybody save for maybe Iowa that had an offensive line, you know, that was capable of doing anything. I mean, that's just, you can't look at it any other way. And that doesn't take anything away from Aiden Hutchinson or Quiddy Pay and the terrific years they had or all the plays they made. That all came on top of deficiencies that were also there. And you can enhance Pay and Hutchinson, who are going to have to be on the field like all game anyway, with guys inside that can help them. And that is such a key to the whole season. What are you going to be up the middle defensively? If you can hang on, then you give yourself a shot in that Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Penn State game. And then who knows? You know, then it's not off the table, Austin, that we're sitting here on what is this date? This Ohio, December 12th, in the middle of winter with 10 feet of snow on the ground, talking about 7-0 Michigan playing Ohio State. It's not impossible. I mean, I wouldn't pick it. I didn't pick it. I don't think you're picking it. No. But it's not impossible if a few things are checked off the box.
All right. Well, Nick, you've got a live Q&A to get to. It's officially that season. We've got podcasts and Q&As and all the football talk we can handle. So that's great. We love that. Thanks, everybody, for checking out The Beat and our new combo of our athletic podcasts here. If you were a subscriber to RPM, the old podcast, you've probably noticed that we have a new show, The Big Football Show, 5 days a week. All of the Athletic's Big Ten writers are contributing to that. I will be co-hosting that show on Thursday this week with our colleague Colton Pouncey, who covers the Spartans. So tune in for that. Tune in for The Beat. Enjoy the football this week, and we will be back to talk to you soon. I seen hard times all my days.